This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
How could I possibly be expected to handle school on a day like this? This is my 9th sick day this semester. It's getting pretty tough coming up with new illnesses. If I go for 10, I'm probably gonna have to barf up a lung. So I better make this one count. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. I do have a test today. It's on European socialism. I mean, really, what's the point? I'm not European. I don't plan on being European. So who gives a crap if they're socialists? They can be fascist anarchists. It still wouldn't change the fact that I don't own a car.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and alongside me is Sharmila Ganesan, and virtually alongside both of us is Arvind Yuvaraj. And today it is Throwback Tuesday. We have got just a real classic of the genre and just a good movie in general. We, as you might have guessed, are throwing it back to Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes, all the way back to 1986, Matthew Broderick dancing, twisting and shouting in the streets of Chicago, and really the thing that he still remembered for 30 years later. Badly or not, I don't know.
And Godzilla.
Yeah, that, well, there is that.
And
Inspector
Godzilla.
Gadget, hello.
Yes, sorry about that.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yeah, and we'll also ask the question again. I don't know if we'll be able to answer it. Is Ferris Bueller a Cameron movie or is it a Ferris Bueller movie? Which is something that a lot of people have thought about. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone has actually come to a conclusion as to whose movie it actually is.
So Ferris Bueller, or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, tells the story of the eponymous character who wakes up and just decides that he's going to take the day off from school. And basically, that's it. The whole thing
is his day off.
Yes. And all the kind of hijinks that he gets up to with his best friend Cameron, his girlfriend Sloane. And you have also Ed Rooney, who is the dean of students from his high school, just saying, "This kid, I need to get him." And that's the big bad, I suppose, assisted in some ways by Jeannie Bueller, who is Ferris's long-suffering sister.
Jennifer Grey.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the setup of the story. Other than that, the thing kind of functions on pure fun, adrenaline, and character. The fact that the characters are so indelible and compelling.
I think anyone who is familiar with the John Hughes sort of movie, I don't know, conglomerate, is that a word? Well, the John Hughes style of filmmaking, which is so 80s and so youthful, will understand what to expect from Ferris Bueller, even if they haven't already seen it, because really it runs on that energy and that feel of what being young at a particular point in time meant. It's a very 80s movie in very, very distinct ways. There are things about it when you watch now and you go, oh, wow, things used to be that way. But it's also a movie that holds up really, really well, because another thing that John Hughes does really well is to tell stories of emotions, and those things I don't think change very much.
And I think you need to know, like you said, you need to know what John Hughes movies are like before watching something like Ferris Bueller, because I don't think it works today as a film, because nothing happens. Like, basically the synopsis that we went through, that's all the movie is, like, from start to finish. Like, there is no big climax, there is no there are no peaks and valleys. It's just his day off, and he's trying to cut school with his best friend Cameron and his girlfriend, and that's about it. So if you're not sort of in the context of those movies, if you don't expect that sort of thing, it might become slightly boring, or you might be like, what is the big deal? But back then, it is the sort of way he made movies, very contained, very isolated stuff. But it doesn't mean it's any less of a film.
I have to say that I don't agree with the no peaks and valleys, because threaded through the movie is this larger idea that I think a lot of other teen movies have grappled with, which is what happens to me after high school. Mm-hmm. So I've had the security of high school, of knowing where I was going to be, of knowing what the next year was going to hold for me. And Ferris is actually a senior, so he's on the verge of graduating, which is why Ed Rooney is like, "You won't graduate if I catch you." And so the stakes are quite high, actually, you know, in the world of Ferris Bueller. And also there's a real sadness, I think, in forming the way that the characters look at the day, which is that there is this sense of this might be the last time that we can do this. This might be the last time that we'll all be together and able to enjoy each other and free time in such an easy way.
I think, you know, that's what makes movies of this genre, that the teenage film, you could arguably call it a teen comedy, but really there's a lot of drama and pathos happening here as well. But I think stories that are told about this phase in life, they are almost always like that. There's this bittersweet sense of both possibility and joy and life being laid out in front of you, but also a lot of things are ending and I'm changing and I don't have control over what comes next. And this movie, as well as I think others that John Hughes has done, yeah, you know, Breakfast Club or Pretty in Pink, they all capture this feeling. And watching it as an adult actually got me. It got me more, I think, than watching it as a teenager myself.
But also, Cameron in the film doesn't want to experience any of those things. Like, he's a sort of a recluse. Like, he's a,
I also,
you know, he's
legit
an introvert.
Think he's depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But they never tell you that. They never, like, you know, explicitly say any of those things. It's also weird that throughout the film, you're not supposed to. I'm not sure if you're not supposed to, but you don't exactly relate with Ferris. Like, I think everyone sort of connects with Cameron, but everyone wants to be Ferris Bueller. You know, he's like the fantasy that every kid has in high school. But no one can reach that level of, like, awesomeness or coolness. Like, no one can be that smooth, right? So you sort of latch on to Cameron instead, which is why I think a lot of people think that maybe this is a movie meant for Cameron, but it's called Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Well, he says it. Ferris himself says it in the movie. Yeah, he says, "I wanted this day for you."
I wanted this to be the best day of your life.
Yeah, yeah. Which is the point at which you realize that this isn't just a smartass kid who is only interested in himself. That maybe there's a reason why everyone seems to like him, and it's not just because he's cool.
So I think that I want to talk a little bit more about the way that Matthew Broderick plays Ferris Bueller, but maybe we'll do that in the second half of the show. For now, though, just to address this issue of Cameron, because Cameron is the stick in the mud, right? Fundamentally, he's the person who's just not wanting to go out, who's very anxious. He's the one who's actually he's your figure in the movie because he's the one going, guys, we're supposed to go home. Guys, I didn't feel good leaving the Ferrari.
Let's
not steal my dad's Ferrari and leave it in a random parking garage with suspicious looking dudes. You know, he's our stand-in. And I think that without Cameron, maybe the movie would have spiraled out into potentially meaninglessness. You know what I mean? Because it is Cameron who makes it not just a fantasy. Because the beauty of Ferris Bueller is that it has these fantastical elements, right? Ferris on a float. I mean, who can ever forget? But it's also got the real anxiety of you knowing that at some point, there are a pair of dirt bags that are out on a road in a, at best, borrowed Ferrari.
I also think that it's Cameron's story, Cameron's family background, whom we never see because we really only see Ferris's family. Cameron's parents are not present literally and figuratively. And he talks about that a lot. His dad loves his car more than he loves his wife and son. You know, Cameron doesn't know what he wants out of life. He doesn't know what he's interested in because he's never been given. I think the only people who care about him or he feels cares about him are really Ferris. And because of that, I kind of agree that it's actually a Cameron movie. Mm. Ferris is the window through which we see that.
You know, when you watch this movie as an adult, you mention his parents, like Cameron's parents, and John Hughes has this this habit of not really showing things from the point of view of the parents. And on the rare occasion that he does, you find out that the parents aren't actually that bad. It's just that the kids think they're bad because that's their point of view and they're all teenagers. So watching it as an adult, when he sort of wrecks the Ferrari or he steals the car, I'm like, man, that's a really nice car. You know,
that's like, when like, you know you've reached an epoch in your life.
Yeah, when you want to relate to the absent father in the story or whatever. But I was kind of thinking, like, does he actually deserve this? We don't know where he's going. He's probably working hard for these cars and stuff, which is not the way you should think, which is not what John Hughes wants you to do. But you can't help but do it when you watch it at a certain age.
So we're talking today about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, or Cameron's sad day being dragged around by his best friend, alternate title. If you enjoyed Ferris Bueller, if you identify with Cameron's absent father, if you love John Hughes movies, we want to hear from you. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with more Ferris Bueller after this on Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
Hello?
Cameron, babe, what's happening?
Very little.
How do you feel?
Shredded.
Is your mother in the room?
She's in Decatur. Unfortunately, she's not staying. Where are you?
I'm taking the day off. Now get dressed and come on over.
You can't, stupid. I'm sick.
That's all in your head. Come on over.
I feel like complete Ferris, I can't go anywhere.
I'm sorry to hear that. Now come on over here and pick me up.
I'm dying.
You're not dying, you just can't think of anything good to do.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture's Throwback Tuesday with Lynn, Arvin and Sharmila. Together we are throwing back to Ferris Bueller's Day Off, a real product of its time, a real product of the 80s, and all the best for it, I think.
Yeah, I think that's important to say because, Arvin, you were talking about the whole that the parents are not shown and perhaps, and you know, Ferris's parents are actually not that bad. They're just a bit dim. Yeah, and seemingly...
They're pretty decent parents.
Right, except they seem to just love their son and not care very much about their daughter, poor Jennifer Grey. But I also think the 80s-ness of the time really affects why the parents are that way because it's that split, right, between the capital sort of the parents are always away and busy with work and
corporate America.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And in contrast, the kids who are kind of just feeling disaffected and they don't necessarily want to take part in that. And in some ways, I think maybe that's why it feels relevant now, because I almost feel like we're seeing a resurgence of that. This whole generation of people who suddenly feel like they're completely out of touch with their parents because they just don't even live on the same planes anymore.
I mean, and honestly, they don't even do anything that bad on his day off.
That's what we'd like to think.
Yeah. What is shown to us? Yeah. Like they go to a museum or like, and they look at art and they go to like a 5-star
which
restaurant.
Which is kind
and like
of sweet, dining. Isn't it? Like,
it is kind of sweet.
Yeah.
The museum sequence is beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yes. You know, it suddenly becomes for a time an art appreciation film where you just kind of linger on paintings and sculptures. Yeah. It's beautiful.
So they walk through the Chicago Museum of Art and you actually see. So when I went to the museum for the first time, Ferris Bueller was the thing in my head because that's why I wanted to go. I wanted to see, George Seurat's painting. I wanted to see the Chagall windows because I'd seen them in Ferris Bueller.
Were you listening to the Smiths?
I was not. But I should have been. But you're right. In a movie that you would think of as being a teen comedy, to suddenly have this beautiful wordless sequence, that's what John Hughes is really about.
Which is very different from stuff like The Breakfast Club, where they show you the teens actually doing stuff that teens are not supposed to do, but are definitely doing. In Ferris Bueller, it's a very innocent day off. Like imagine if you wrote a script and went like, it's a teen movie, it's a coming of age movie, it's actually not. And it's about a bunch of teens who cut school and then go to museums and really good restaurants and then go watch a parade. You'd be like, and go for a swim. That if parents are worried about those kinds of things, it's like the least of their worries. It's like, fine, just have a day off. And maybe that's why they're good parents. Maybe that's why Ferris Bueller doesn't worry about Ferris Bueller.
And that's why you hate Ed Rooney, because you're like, man, they're just looking at some art.
You know what my issue is with Ed Rooney? It's such a beautifully played performance by Geoffrey Jones, right? It's so funny. Every moment that he's in is just comedy gold. But I think what makes him so great is every decision he makes is terrible. So, he just every move that he decides to make, every time he decides, okay, this is the moment that I can be the aggressor, he's always wrong. And so I just appreciated that he's kind of a doofus and quite malevolent, but also essentially harmless. ridiculous. I did want to, before we start talking about Ferris himself, because we've kind of sidestepped it, but it's important. I did want to say, watching it as an adult, one thing I did notice, aside from that sense of nostalgia and loss that comes from not being that young anymore, because they're really young. They're like 18, 17, 18. I think the other thing that I got from it, and to build on your point about capitalism, Sharmila, it's about, I think, the importance of taking days off. I think that's why they don't do, you know, that's why they don't go out and start drinking or something. It's because essentially it's a look at what happens when your life is completely conscripted. You know, every day is just another day at the office or another day at school. And it's that sense of freedom and just the belief that you are allowed to take a day off. Ferris is a character who just goes, I want a day off, I'm going to take it. And I think in America, where, as we know, work days leave, you know, these are very tricky subjects for them. They don't have the public holidays that we have. They have issues with days off. I think that that's why the movie continues to resonate, because of work culture, not necessarily high school culture.
And that's why the line from the movie that continues to be quoted over and over is the one that Ferris actually starts the movie with, which is, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. And I love that line. It's simple, but I love it so much.
I mean, there's so many things from the movie that keep getting like repeated. A lot of things that this movie started, I think it's for one, it's like the pinnacle teen movie. It set the stage for like so many other things. I think it also started the trend of having many posters on the walls of teenagers, and many posters of bands that teenagers were not listening to at that time. And it also started the trend of having post-credit scenes. I don't think many movies did
also
that.
Also the fourth wall thing. Not the first, the but thing. Definitely one of the first ones to make it such a big thing.
Yeah, the fourth wall thing, post-credit scenes. So many things that the movie started to do that have been replicated since, and replicated well, that first came from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
So I love Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I enjoy Ferris Bueller himself very much. Can we talk about whether or not he's a psychopath? Can we just go there for a second?
I think it's a legitimate question. I think, like all John Hughes movies, this film, you know, there's always an underlying darkness to a lot of his characters. Not necessarily so dark that you get existential watching it, but definitely some darkness. I think Ferris Bueller isn't entirely normal. He's quite selfish at most points, even though he can be really nice at others. I might agree with you. At least manic in some ways.
At least, yeah, maybe. Inconsiderate, yeah. You want to hear about dark? What about the theory that Ferris Bueller is a figment of Cameron's imagination?
Yes, okay. I've read that, yeah.
Yeah?
I will say that watching this movie, I veered all the time over how I felt about Ferris. So I never wanted him to get caught because, again, as an adult, I'm just like, you know what, kid, take the day off. Seriously, just do it. It's fine.
He's done it 8 times before.
Yes, that's right. You know, and now that he's digitally changed his record, he can do it another 6 times or whatever. But I did think it's fine, whatever. It's, however, his disregard, I think, for his friend, for Cameron in particular, you know, who he puts in severe discomfort because of the stealing of the dad's car or the borrowing of the dad's car. And also, I think the way that he operates in this world is without fear, right? That's a big thing for Ferris. It's you have to aim big. You got to take big risks, get big rewards. And I think that's what makes him such a cool, admirable character. He's somebody that you want your life to work out the way things seem to work out for Ferris. And Matthew Broderick's fourth wall breaking performance is so fantastic. He's so charming. He's so arrogant. He's so fun. And that's what makes you forgive bad behavior, just like real life, friends.
Gosh, I didn't realize the second half was going to get this dark. Yeah, I will say, though, that yes, Matthew Broderick's charm and exuberance and just that youthfulness of that performance really sells the more difficult things about this movie, or difficult not in the, you know, dark difficult, but even just like, really, can someone really get, you know, be that or do that? But the way Matthew Broderick plays this role, he can.
Which is so weird because he hasn't played a role like that since.
Yeah.
Which is such a, you know, like Michael J. Fox kind of played Michael J. Fox roles for like a long, long, long time. But Matthew Broderick played Ferris Bueller, and then after that, he sort of played mostly, for lack of better terms, like a doormat character on most shows. You know what I mean? He would be the guy who gets bullied. He would be the opposite of Ferris Bueller. And I don't know why that happened. I don't know why his career went off that way. It's not a bad career, but it's funny that Matthew Broderick didn't go back to playing roles like Ferris Bueller when he obviously played it so well.
Yeah, I think he does a lot of theatre work now. So I, if I had to guess, I think it's a question of diversification for his career. But I agree. I mean, as somebody who grew up on Matthew Broderick fixed in my mind as Godzilla and Inspector Gadget, the very first time I watched Ferris Bueller was when I realized that at some point in time, Matthew Broderick had it in him to be a heartthrob. I just didn't get that, you know, as somebody looking at 40-year-old Matthew Broderick.
So weirdly enough, that's why I've always had, I still see Matthew Broderick as Ferris Bueller, because Ferris Bueller was my first Matthew Broderick. So I still get a little bit of a, you know, heart-skipping thing when I see him.
For me, it's still the one-off. For me, it's like, because I didn't grow up with Ferris Bueller as Matthew Broderick, so it's still the one-off. I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think Ferris Bueller did when he left school? Like, what does
so
he do? Does
John
he...
Hughes says he either went to jail or became president. And I kind of feel like, yeah, it is actually one of those things.
I think that, so to me, he is probably tending bar. You know, as in he's that incredibly cool...
Tom Cruise in Cocktail?
No, not that guy. Just the guy where you're like, why are you here? And then every person who leaves his bar is healed. And it's like, that's why you're here. So that to me is where Ferris at, I don't know, 39
I would go to that bar.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. For me, Ferris Bueller is one of the most singularly joyful movies that you can watch.
I
mean,
I agree.
We've made it sound a bit dark. And I think that you could take those readings of it if you want, which is what makes it so eminently rewatchable. But also, guys, it'll make you happy. So Ferris Bueller as a throwback, if you have the time, you know, would be a good one. And if you've seen it recently, or if you just want to weigh in on Ferris and Cameron and Sloan and Ed Rooney, you can let us know by WhatsApping 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at movies@bfm.my, and find us on social media. We are BFM Popcorn on both Twitter and Instagram. You're listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.